This is just my new Letterman thing.
Okay.
That's my new thing.
You did it like two or three times.
Yeah, that's my new thing. Like when Dave throws the cards, you know?
I like it. I like it.
Anyway, all right, everybody.
I noticed you, you did it every time tonight when I was talking. So.
Well, Kevin.
We always have an intro, but like tonight I'm just like.
Yeah, well, you'll listen back later and you'll find some stuff.
Oh, there's stuff there.
Very important that I want to come on, and I'm not scared of the pushback, backlash, canceling. I say no coronavirus.
Yeah,
this is my stand. I'm against
it. Thank you. Thank you,
Trey. And you know, it's just a way to sort of exercise our societal anxiety. So it makes a lot of sense.
So it's kind of like a misery loves company situation where like you're upset at what's happening with government or with the economy or with war, and instead of like watching happy things to get away and kind of set your mind apart from all the negative stuff, you watch like the depressing stuff where zombies are killing people.
Well, you know, when you look at these particular stories, these are people generally in these movies who are taking control of a really bad situation and are making the best of this really bad situation. So it's like a way of finding control, sort of a psychological, cultural control that they lack in real life.
Welcome to Speak All Evil, the podcast you were warned about. We are back in the Dungeon of Doom this week, Zombie Mania. Kevin, you're already making motions to other members of the program about me. Kat's here. Dave is here. We watched a bunch of zombie movies for this, and I think that there's a lot going on in a lot of them. We started with Dawn of the Dead, which 1978, George Romero, not available on any streaming platform other than free on YouTube. You can't even rent it on YouTube. You can only watch a free extended cut. It's 2.5 hours. It's every scene that they shot. This one, it's a little heat, I think, among all of us. I love Dawn of the Dead. I think it's possibly the greatest horror movie of all time. I know I said greatest before. I might back off a little bit.
I think you say that every episode.
I do.
I think I say greatest horror movie of all time about one movie every episode.
I think it is. And I grant that for me, it was very personal, like... to me, at the time that I saw it, which I was pretty young, and it was very mysterious, Day of the Dead, which is the sequel, it's the third of the Romero trilogy, or the original trilogy, obviously, but it was very mysterious to me that you didn't see like trailers on television about Dawn of the Dead. You just saw it at video stores, and you saw things about it, and it was about eating people and stuff. And it seemed to me like it would be like really transgressive and really weird. And so when I finally saw it, the movie itself starts like right away with the most, Tom Savini, the special effects artist, it's his first movie. So it starts out right away with like the most brutal stuff of people like biting each other's necks off and heads exploding. I'd like to talk about that at some point. So I was like, wow, I can't believe something so crazy. I've never seen so much blood and guts and eating flesh in the first, you know, 20 minutes of a movie.
But Tom Savini is a master of exploding heads, for sure. The exploding head that happens in the beginning when the police raid the apartment, and the black dude's head just explodes.
And Kevin, not to steal your thunder. But that first exploding head in Dawn of the Head, is pretty big. And what they did was they filled this fake head with food scraps, and they actually shot it with a shotgun. to get the authentic look of a head being shot. Did you watch this, Kat?
Yeah.
You did?
I did. I had never seen it before. This is my first watch. I'd seen the remake. I thought it was good. I thought it was very... It seemed like when it came out, like it makes sense for the kind of movie it was. It came out in 1978, so that makes sense. The remake, I always thought was super terrifying, and so I was excited to watch the beginning one. And I thought, you know, I think it holds up, personally, well, being like the original, the OG.
The production is like really low quality. Besides for the special effects, like the makeup is not great.
They're
it's
all
just blue.
Yeah.
Yeah. The special effects are great because it's Tom Savini. I love him forever. He went on to do much better things. But it looked like a Starsky and Hutch, like 1970s, like detective episode. Like it was such low quality. And then it just had zombies added to that.
Look, we talked about in the episode with the Invisible Man, we talked about you, Dave, specifically talked about the old-timey acting. And
yeah.
One thing I noticed about this movie is there's some total like, oh, well, we'll go get them. Like there's some of that acting that like you were making fun of. So I went back because Trent and Dave were fighting all this week about Dawn of the Dead. And it is an incredibly long version that we watch. It's 2 hours yes. and 34 minutes. It's a slow zombie movie. So making a movie 2 hours and 34 minutes about really slow zombies is painful. So I went back and I watched a bunch of extra credit movies from the same time. So I watched like Fulci's Zombie.
Who is Fulci?
Lucio Fulci, Italian director.
No, I know that, but I'm asking so that.
So
I
went back and watched Lucio Fulci's Zombie, which I didn't know at the time was actually released in Italy a few years after. Dawn of the Dead as Zombie 2 because Zombie was released in Italy as Zombie. Or I'm sorry, Dawn of the Dead was released in Italy as Zombie. And so Fulci made this sequel, he thought, to Romero's Dawn of the Dead. And then I watched, a movie, The Tomb of the Blind Zombies. I went back and watched some old ones. And I think one of the reasons Dawn of the Dead holds up is because it is far superior to these other films that came out after Night of the Living Dead caused the zombie craze, you know, an explosion of movies. But it still didn't hold me like I remembered it. I think in my memory, I hold it in higher regard than it actually does come out. But I will say, watching some of these other movies that came out at the same time, it is a far superior movie. And I will say, one thing about Dawn, the score is unbelievable, and I had no idea that, you know, Dario Argento was a script consultant as well as pulled in Goblin, which is the legendary horror
Demons.
Movie score. Yes. Mm-hmm. And pulled them in to do the score of this movie. They did a ton of your favorite horror movie scores.
Dario Argento, who's an Italian horror filmmaker, he came on board to get them some seed money, get them some production money so that they could make the movie. And then he brought in Goblin, as you say, and did some screenwriting consulting with George Romero, RIP. You guys get a little disrespectful, to be honest. but I feel like what a lot of people don't get about the movie is all of this stuff, you know, the breakdown of all human order, right? The news, one of the first things that happens is that the news breaks down. You see newscasts where it's going chaotic and people are dying and then the channels go out. Peacekeeping breaks down. The law enforcement is giving up. One of the first things that happens is you see the SWAT team and the cops and the local cops. They start saying, this is not, you know, for us. And one of the early questions in the movie among the law enforcement officers is it wrong to run?
Mm-hmm.
Do we have, like, what is our obligation to try to keep, you know, peace and order here? And what is our obligation to save ourselves? And that runs through every zombie movie since. And I loved that when it's asked, is it wrong to run? A priest walks in.
Well, I think it's funny you mentioned the news breaking down, because I thought one of the good, like, societal things that it pointed out is there are people in that newsroom that are clinging so hard to their jobs.
as the entire world is breaking down. And they're looking at all of their people and hollering at their employees. You get behind that camera. Mm-hmm. You tell this story. You do this. And it's like, dude, go home and hug your wife because she's probably going to be eating you later.
Mmm. That is so good. And I'm hungry too.
Nice.
Well, the thing that I do, like you were saying, this like disrespect, you know, like I like the movie. I don't think it held up over time. Like a lot of movies don't. A lot of the classics, for me, they just don't hold up over time. But Dawn of the Dead, in the way that like Bram Stoker defined vampire tropes, he invented the zombie, you know? So in a lot of ways, they're like, it was just an action movie.
Yeah, you brought that up.
A very slow action movie.
Yeah, it was an action movie. It reminded me of like, you know, not like Starsky and Hutch, but like Death Wish or something, like those early like 70s, 80s cop movies, you know, inner city, grimy. It reminded me of that a little bit, but it did define what we know now as zombies. And I like that the genre in general has kept up to that. Like, people have been like, all right, George Romero invented this shit. We're going to stay true to what he said, and we're going to make the zombies, you know, for the most part, you got to cut off the head, you got to sever the, you know, the brain stem or whatever, and that's how you kill them. And this is what they want. And I also liked in Dawn of the Dead that they were like, they were into things that they were into in real life.
Right. They still, why are they doing, they're like going to the diner,
the coffee shop, and they're like, you know.
Yeah, why are they coming to the mall?
Right.
Like, I one of my notes was like the mall is like the new iPhone. So if the zombie apocalypse broke out today, if there was no one to eat around, everyone would probably still pull their phone out of their pocket and just be looking at it.
The zombies would be on Facebook.
Yeah.
Eat Facebook.
Posting hungry.
Yeah, one thing that I think was a theme throughout all the movies that we watched is that once you figure out zombies, like once you've got that in your bag and you know how to keep them out, then you have to worry about humans, like the other humans coming in. And that's the scary part, personally, I think.
Yeah, that is another thing that is different about this that kind of mutated after this movie. In Dawn of the Dead, the original, the group, the in-group stays very cohesive. There isn't really any of the most zombie movies after this. One of the major things is the fighting within the in-group and the paranoia and the pissing matches and stuff like that. And what are we going to do? And in Dawn of the Dead, it stays like it's like the most they're all so close and there's none of that.
They all get bored with each other.
I appreciated that the camaraderie among this band of survivors, the camaraderie stayed through the whole movie.
And it's camaraderie, but I guess as we talk about this, I'm appreciating like Romero's portrayal here more. Yeah, there's camaraderie, but he still paints a very distinctive picture of characters you like and you dislike. Because does anyone like Flyboy in this movie?
I loved Flyboy.
Really? Of course you would. Of course you would. He's still that aside. Let's. It's too early. Let's leave it.
I never liked the wild card, the one that's going to get everyone in trouble. I never liked that dude.
But he's still painting a good picture of everybody's role in. In this, yes, they are staying cohesive. That's a fantastic point. Like, they really do. But he's still kind of lining these people up on a chessboard, like, who's going to fall over first?
I thought one of the most depressing parts of the movie was when Flyboy meets his end in the elevator to the zombies. He has been a solid member of this team. Flyboy got them there, first of all, Kevin. Yeah.
Okay. His character development was great, I will say. From the beginning to the end, I thought he had a good character arc.
And also, his name was way ahead of its time. It sounds like a Gen Z rapper, like an auto-tune rapper. He kills himself on Xanax.
Or
like,
he was on In Living Color.
Flyboy is dope.
His name is Steven. Say it.
Steven.
One of the other... One of the other characters started calling him Flyboy as a nickname, as a... Like one of us might start calling one
whatever.
Of the other.
It's that machismo, Top Gun shit, whatever, I get it.
I didn't think it was machismo. I thought that it was like like we might have nicknames like we do for each other. I thought that it was like sort of a form of endearment.
And I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder. One of the four beasts saying, "Come and see." And I saw, and behold, a white horse.
There's a man.
So there was a remake of this movie in 2004?
Yes.
Directed by Zack Snyder. I love the remake.
Me too.
I think it's great. I also, watching these movies and realizing that 28 Days Later came out a year before the remake, I was like, oh, shit. Zack Snyder must have been like, let's make them fast zombies. Mm-hmm. So I do still love it, and I watched it, but it's almost like 28 Days Later, the original Dawn of the Dead had sex and made a baby with like an MTV music video. That's like sort of the vibe I get from the remake.
I thought it was super scary. I thought it was much scarier. The remake was much scarier than the first one.
I love the remake, and it is much scarier. It's hard to be scared by a 30, 40, 50-year-old movie, and we run into that a lot as horror fans. We've talked about Suspiria and Rosemary's Baby, and a lot of these old movies aren't really – it's like hard to be scared by something so rudimentary. But I appreciate the vision of the beginnings of like doing something that nobody had thought about doing ever. Like something that's so original and so creative to me and so driven by a personal passion that it's not like Blumhouse was just like, oh, we'll give you however many million dollars to do a remake of this, Zack Snyder. It's a little bit more straight action movie to me. I don't think there's a lot of commentary going on. And I think that, hold on, Kevin. What commentary is going on seems to me a little manufactured and a little like perfunctory, like, well, we have to have some social commentary, have a pregnant lady of a different ethnicity, and we'll call that our social commentary.
I thought that was like this one of the scarier parts, though, of like the baby like trying to push its way out of like. Can you imagine? I mean, I guess it's hard for you guys to imagine, but if I were to have a little baby in my tum, trying to like push its way out, like I can't think of anything scarier than that. She was already a zombie, though, I guess at that point, but it's creepy. Little hands, you know.
It's very scary and creepy. It's very MTV, and I don't know what color a zombie is in real life since they don't exist. So I'm not sure I get the criticism on that part, Dave.
Dave.
I was passing the baton. I wasn't asking you to answer for why a zombie can't be blue. Like what color?
When people die, they turn blue. I mean, that's maybe realistic. They just look stupid. I'm just not going to say I like a movie just because it's a classic.
Contrarian troll. Dave Gutter.
I will say one last point about Dawn of the Dead for a factual.
What?
So Ken Foray, who plays Peter in Dawn of the Dead,
Did I interrupt you one time? Speaking of Peter, do you have a drink?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love a drink. He was talking some dark shit about Dawn of the Dead. Go.
Well, I just wanted to mention that Ken Foray, who plays Peter in the movie, also shows up in one of Rob Zombie's movies, The Devil's Rejects, as Charlie, who owns the brothel, where the Firefly family goes to find some refuge. And then if you notice in the remake of Dawn of the Dead, he shows up on when they're all watching the news. Ken Foray shows up and he says the iconic line, "When hell is full, when there's no more room in hell,
you don't even know the line.
The dead will walk the earth. Go fuck yourself."
If anybody is interested in the point of the original 1978 Dawn of the Dead, it is the complacency with which people retreat from outside threat to consumerism. One of the things that happens, well, first of all, it takes place in a mall for a reason.
Because they're mauling people. The zombies are mauling
M-A-U-L.
Them like bears.
Well, this is an M-A-L-L mall.
Oh, okay.
And what happens with the characters over the arc of the story is that they create a whole life within the mall. They have an apartment set up. They got TVs in there. There's a date where they have the fancy dinner. And one of the characters is serving, Peter, I think, is serving wine to them, acting as their garçon. And they become very ensconced and they become very complacent in this, like, this is it. You know, it's just going to be the four of us living this very comfortable lifestyle. Everything they want is in the mall. They've got all the supplies they need. They've got all the food. They've got all the entertainment. But what happens, and I think Francine, the character of Francine, probably best articulates it.
Franny.
Francine. And this runs through all the movies that we watched. Hold on, Kevin. This is like one of the major themes of all the zombie movies is what is the difference between just merely existing and maybe you're comfortable, sure, and maybe you've got your needs met, but are you really living? Is that living?
Boring.
You can cut me out later. Let me fucking finish. I got five more fucking pages of notes on this, so let me just finish. The point
so the
is
next
that
movie we're...
the difference between living and existing, or existing and living.
Fucked on you, Dawn. Yeah, throw your notes out, bro.
It's true. I mean, it's. I'll say it for the original Dawn, for the remake, for a lot of these movies that we're about to talk about. It is. It's. You almost, they do a great job of lulling the viewer into being like, oh man, you have it so good. I'm so pumped. Mm-hmm. And then at some point they're all like, me as a viewer, I'm like, why do you want to give this up? It seems so comfortable.
Yeah, whenever the people that are running from the zombies, whenever they get to a supermarket, I'm just like, just stay there. You're good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who wouldn't want to just shop in a closed supermarket for free?
Sleepover. Yeah. Yeah.
What's wrong with that, Kat?
Nothing. I'm agreeing with you.
So the next movie we watched, I think, in chronological order was 28 Days Later.
2002, that is 22 years after Dawn of the Dead.
Nice.
Kat, this is a little bit more, you probably watched this when you were a fetus.
Yes. Just 8 pounds, 6 ounces, just came out. I think this was like one of the first zombie movies that I remember like watching and being terrified of. Cillian Murphy, super babe, personally. That was like my childhood crush. So
yeah,
that
I
was
think
cool
he's hot
for me.
Too, and I'm not even gay.
Yeah. He's a babe. But yeah, I just like the relationships in that movie are very interesting because it's just the two, you know, it starts out there's like a guy, but they have to kill him off, you know, to show people that, you know, I'm going to kill whoever I need to keep on living. Like that badass babe. It's just, you know, killing people, taking names.
Her name is Selena.
Selena, thank
Say
you.
It.
Oh, yeah, we got Jim, Selena, Hannah, and Frank okay. are the characters.
You can use those names.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can be like, you know, a little bit more sensitive to like women's names specifically instead of just saying her.
I'd like to hear some once in a while.
You know, I noticed that this podcast is like us actually just asking cat questions like that we want to know about women, like indirectly, you know, like Bride of Frankenstein and Frankenstein broke up mm-hmm. and then like Frankenstein like got a Tinder account mm-hmm. and then he like shut it off.
Yeah.
Would they still get back together?
Yeah, probably. She has the same name as him, so she doesn't really have an identity besides being the bride of Frankenstein. So they kind of got to be together in that.
These episodes are great for that. Yeah, I learned a lot
say,
about women.
Say her name. What's her name? The bride of Frankenstein?
She's just the bride.
She's not even an individual person.
I mean, I do have them both tattooed on me.
Mrs. Frankenstein, so. Bitch.
Wait, you have both Frankenstein and the Bride of Frankenstein tattooed on your body.
Yeah, that was my Halloween tattoo I treated myself to last
year. Where
are they? On my legs. Take pics for the gram. We can post it on the gram.
Learn something new every episode.
That's great.
Go on.
Trying to think, how many horror tattoos do I have?
Jaws.
I have two Jaws tattoos. I have the Bride and Frankenstein.
Wow.
I have Medusa. Tom Waits doesn't really count. But,
oh my God, I have Tom Waits does. Tattoo. This is Tom Waits. Wow.
I can't. Look at
him. Wow, that's beautiful.
Thank you. Sorry, sidebar.
This is very Jaws right now.
Yeah. Okay, what do you got, Trent?
Sorry.
I have Dave tattooed to me.
Oh. Nice. When are we getting Speak All Evil tattoos?
Well, I'll get one.
Let's do it.
I was thinking, actually, today I was thinking of getting like a pentagram or something like
Kat.
Evil.
No, I liked what you were getting at, Kat, about Selena is killing everyone. It's again, another thing that runs through these movies mm-hmm. is who is in your in-group and who is not.
Yeah.
The surest sign, obviously, is when they turn. As soon as someone turns, you have to dispatch them. Anyone could be your husband.
And they turned very fast in 28 Days Later. It was like what they say, like 10 to 20 seconds someone turns. So that's a very, as opposed to like...
Dawn of the Dead takes Dawn like an Dead. Hour for
yeah,
a guy to turn.
Exactly, no, yeah.
Just 28 Days Later, it's the first fast zombie movie.
Mm-hmm.
And like, fuck all these slow zombies. That shit does not stress me out.
1985, Return of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
I like that.
That's where the fast
kids in the graveyard.
That's where the fast zombies started. But this was the first one I think since then to be like, hey, by the way,
that was one of my favorite zombie movies.
And it's I think it's funny that a year later the Dawn of the Dead remake came out, and Zack Snyder was like, hey, this 28 Days Later thing. But so this was directed by Danny Boyle, who is known for Trainspotting, which is a huge departure.
And I Yesterday, guess, which is a huge departure.
Which I guess if you really break it down, maybe not. For me personally, I remember this movie being a lot more fast-paced than it was. It's actually deceptively slow. Like there's not a whole – there are some cool action scenes, but it's really, really slow. And like it relies a lot on Cillian Murphy, which I think is fantastic because, yeah – total babe. Like, he's a rock star. I love that guy.
We should fuck him.
But we've talked about The Walking Dead. A lot of people noticed that when The Walking Dead came out, the opening sequence of The Walking Dead is Rick Grimes in a deserted hospital
waking up.
And not realizing there was a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
Well, in 28 Days Later, the opening sequence, it's Cillian Murphy waking up in a hospital bed in a deserted hospital during the zombie apocalypse. So Kirkman has actually said that it was pure coincidence. He said they already had the first episode of The Walking Dead in the can.
Well, it was a comic book.
In production. Yes, it's a graphic novel. And that he panicked and went back to everybody, and they were already producing the second issue of The Walking Dead, and said, well, should we go back and redo this? And everyone was like, no, we can't do that. Mm-hmm. And he was like, okay, no one will probably notice. Well, everybody fucking noticed and was like, who ripped off who?
Mm-hmm.
This movie has been ripped off for almost 20 years now. It's 18 years old. And I loved the hospital scene. Did we mention the full frontal?
Yeah, right away.
Bang.
I watched that with my daughter, forgetting about the full frontal scene.
I loved that whole idea of waking up in a hospital or waking up anywhere, and you don't know what's going on, and you walk outside, and there's nobody anywhere in the world.
In like, London.
That's something that I dream about. I want to happen. I would love to wake up in a hospital and walk outside and be like,
everybody there are people there is waiting gone. To eat you.
Well, I can deal with them.
The problem I had, it was two music video, like we were talking before. It was like an MTV production. It was like so grainy, you couldn't see stuff. Like, I just wanted to see what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was a little too like overproduced on that end of it. But I liked the movie overall. But just the look of the whole thing, just... was a little too processed for me.
It was. I noticed that now, especially. And this was one that I watched a number of times and when it came out. And that was the biggest thing. Not the biggest thing, but that was one of the things that stuck out to me was, this is so like, oh, we were in 2002. We think we're making some state-of-the-art video stuff right here. Like, look at this. Could be a video.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily age as well as it might.
They actually shot a lot of those grainy scenes on, I think they're like P91 cams.
Yeah, it's like it was digital, yeah.
Because they could only get those sections of London shut down at certain times of day.
I wondered about obviously. That. Yeah. I mean, where is everybody? We're in the middle of London. Like, where did they put everyone?
It's one of the most like beautiful. It's beautiful to me. Like
it really is.
It felt like nobody. It felt
they just
hopeless,
filmed it during the World Cup.
But like you just said, Trent, I literally would honestly like and like want to know what that feels like to walk outside and be like, okay, downtown Portland, Maine is completely empty, and I'm just walking out here by myself. I'd love to walk out of Maine Med and be like. So I had a problem with the ending of the movie and the military aspect they brought into it. I did not enjoy this movie when they brought the military in. And there are actually alternate endings that Boyle did that did not test well with audiences. So in one of them, the military, well, I guess in both of them, the military never comes in. They get to the military blockade where in the actual film cut, the military rescues them, and then it gets super weird.
So weird.
So weird. I didn't enjoy that twist.
That's the thing, you know, thinking about Dawn of the Dead, when, you know, they figure out the zombie problem, then you have to deal with the people. That was the most stressful part for me of 28 Days Later, because it's just a bunch of dudes that are like, all right, now we got to repopulate the Earth. These women are ours now. And it's like, whoa,
which
buddy.
To me seemed like a cop-out. And it's like, it's a bunch of dudes that are armed and already super roided up. Like, so in one, when they get to the military blockade, Jim is hurt and he dies at the at the hospital.
Really?
But the one that I love, and if you have the DVD of 28 Days Later, they storyboarded this. They filmed the first one that I just mentioned, and test audiences hated it. But Boyle and the producers still think that that's like the true ending. But there's another one. When Frank gets infected, they take him to the abandoned hospital, and he has the daughter. And so Jim ends up offering to have a full blood transfusion to save Frank so that he can go on with his daughter.
But and in like 10 seconds, they try to do this?
So they abandoned that ending. If you watch the DVD, the storyboard is beautiful. It's really emotional because Jim is just giving himself up. Like, you have a daughter. Just, I'm going to give you all of my blood. But they abandoned that ending because they had already established, like you said, that it takes one drop of blood. And you're infected.
And that's it.
So how realistic could it have been? Because unlike other movies where it's like an hour and then you turn into a zombie, in 28 Days Later, they established like a new zombie trope where one drop of blood and seconds later, you're eating everybody.
The military compound is the point of the entire movie. So what the movie is doing... I am upset. I don't. You're saying that you didn't like the entire point of the movie, which is that they have been looking for this military compound the whole time to be their salvation. They've heard the broadcast on the radio. What this is about, this is 2002. So what we're dealing with now with the migrant crisis and immigration, this started in Europe well before. Because this is about replacement fear, British replacement fear, about migrants and immigrants coming in and taking over their country and replacing them, the pitfalls and the folly of turning to a militarized authoritarianism to remedy that situation. Because as you see in the movie, when you turn to that kind of solution, it doesn't go anywhere good. Those guys are Nazis. The compound, little fun fact, the villain's name, Major Henry West. Last name West, as in...
Kanye West.
No.
Oh.
as in globally, the West.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
That's why his name is West. And okay. if you notice in the compound, there's all these statues of white Western European thinkers that a lot of these white power guys, especially in Europe, venerate and, you know, elevate above anyone of color or anyone that's not from Europe. So that whole compound is a Nazi compound, and it is the result of people turning to authoritarianism, fascism, and racism. When they get there, they think they're going to be saved. They're almost immediately become hostages, and what they want is to use Selena and Hannah, the young girl. They want to use them to breed as let me finish. They want to use them to continue their white lineage so that they can maintain their white culture and their Western heritage and their lineage. And it's like 20 years beyond a lot of American horror movies. That's, to me, that was the whole point.
I agree. Everything you just said is very factual. Nice job, facts guy.
Great.
You're the facts guy. You're just being jealous right now.
No. I'm
he's like, that's Mike. What are you looking shit up for?
I am more saying, yes, that is where the movie went. What I am trying to say is I wish it hadn't gone there. I liked everything they did up until that point. I think they could have taken this movie somewhere differently and not relied on a bunch of super easy things to display.
That's what was happening.
And they even went as far as to rip off Day of the Dead and have Bub chained up in the yard. I mean,
that was awesome.
Sure, if you want to just have a great movie for three quarters of the way, cop out like that. Fine, I agree with everything you just said. I understand what they were getting at, the imagery, all the points they were trying to make. I just wish that this particular movie hadn't gone there.
The chained up zombie was an homage to Bub. That's all I'll say. Dave.
In less words, it was I. The next movie we watched was Shaun of the Dead, also a British movie. And it was a horror comedy. And it's one of my favorite movies of all time. I love this movie so much.
Really? Wait, Shaun of the Dead is one of your favorite movies of all time?
Oh, I love it. I love all the... Yeah, there's so many stupid dad jokes and puns. And, like, I love that shit.
So, Shaun of the Dead is a 2004 horror movie. Horror comedy movie. Directed by Edgar Wright, starring Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. It basically is a gigantic homage to all classic zombie movies. And in my opinion, is the absolute epitome of horror comedy. It stars Simon Pegg as Sean, who is basically a living zombie and going through some personal stuff in his life where his girlfriend is leaving him. He lives with a deadbeat roommate who is his best friend. And all of this culminates with the zombie apocalypse happening and him ultimately having to get his shit together.
I love Shaun of the Dead. It's just I rewatched it. I hadn't seen it in years, and I just forgot how funny it was. Just like thinking about when they're in the garden when they first realize that there's the zombie and they have the disposable camera, and he like whines that like he was like taking a picture of the zombie attacking Sean because they thought it was some drunk girl in the lawn.
They literally say, "Oh my god, she's so."
Yeah. And then like she gets impaled basically and then comes back up and they're just staring and then he slowly like winds the camera up to take a picture. Like it's just like the little details like that I just love this.
Like I'm sure there are many fans of the American Office, but Shaun of the Dead is like if you've seen the British Office, it's like watching an American attempt at a horror comedy. But it's done right.
Oh, it's so
like
good.
It's so good.
It's funny you should mention the British Office, Kevin, because
the way you say my name is so vindictive.
Coven. I'm sorry. It's Coven. It's funny you should mention the British Office, Coven, because one of the stars of Shaun of the Dead is Lucy Davis, who played Dawn in the British Office. Mm-hmm. I like to think of her as Dawn of the Office.
Hey-o.
War Brave.
Good one.
Wow, really got in for my spot here, huh?
Yeah, I know.
You're that insecure?
Yeah, so you don't know anything about the British Office.
You have that much of an inferiority complex.
No, I've seen the British Office. I really loved it. So I recognized Dawn of the Office right away. Name is Lucy Davis, say it. One to me was also the most relatable, personally relatable. Mm-hmm. I can relate to personal complacency. Maybe a big surprise to you guys, but I can really relate to like the zombie in this movie is the personal complacency of just sleepwalking through your life and neglecting your relationships, and playing video games, and you don't even notice that a zombie apocalypse is happening right outside your door, but you're just trying to go to the pub and like have beer and whatever. Yeah. And you forget to make reservations, and you know
that like redundancy, the routine that they're stuck in. They end up still staying in that same routine when the zombies come,
even in the apocalypse.
Yeah,
and I love the mother so much from Shaun of the Dead.
Oh,
the mother,
so
I want her to be my mom. Like she was so
well.
Dope.
It's so the movie has so many references to classic horror movies, and the mother's name is Barbara. So Sean's mother's name is Barbara, and I loved. I know. I'm sure I've noticed it before because I've watched this movie countless times.
Barbara Bush.
No, Sean's mother's name is Barbara.
Say it.
When they're coming up with their plan of how to get out of their apartment, Ed gets on the phone and says, "We're coming to get you, Barbara."
Oh, I never even noticed that.
Night of the Living Dead.
We're coming to get you.
They're coming
Barbara.
To get you, Barbara.
Wow.
There's so many subtle references in this movie to that. And again, I watch these movies now with you assholes in my head. And I'm like, how can I outdo you? How can I out-observe? Well, but I'm also thinking about, you know, I've been thinking about Night of the Living Dead because it's come up a ton.
Shit. All right.
Do you want to do that again? That you're not screaming at him in the middle of what he's saying.
It's fine.
She's so drunk.
When they're in the store, that's a total tribute to Evil Dead. They're all dressed up like Ash, and then as Sean is trying to assert himself as manager, somebody's like, "Oh shit, Ash called out today," and they all look like they're dressed. Like the store and Evil Dead. Like Edgar Wright murdered
these. These are some deep cuts.
No, he murdered
very
this.
Deep
I
cuts.
I was watching it. Look, I was watching this. I ran downstairs to get my notebook. My wife looked at me and said, what are you doing? I said, I needed my notebook. And she said, I fucking hate when you have hobbies.
Oh, she's so drunk.
One of the things was it played with, Dave, your problem with zombies is that they're often slow.
Well, I like him in the comedy.
You're fast. Yeah, but that's what's funny about it, because they do is they just weave in and out of they just walk around them. There's they don't really, the zombies are pretty well under control.
When he takes the weed call in the village, that's like one of the best moments. He takes a weed call from his homie, like when the zombies are approaching.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. They've got
the slow zombies in this.
The zombies are not a big problem, really. The problem is that they are the zombies, and that's why I love the scene when they have to impersonate zombies. Mm-hmm. To get by the zombies, and they just act like zombies, is they are the zombies.
It's a brilliant movie. I highly recommend it to anyone.
So George Romero loved this movie. He got a private screening before he passed, and he asked Simon Pegg, who is Sean in Shaun of the Dead, and Edgar Wright to have starring roles in Land of the Dead, which was his fourth movie after many, many years. I think Land of the Dead was 2004, 2005. And Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg, I think, got it right. And they said, nah, you know what? That's way better off if we're just zombies in this movie. I think, Dave, you made a comment while we were texting this week that you hate the fact that there's just all these random extras in these zombie movies. Yeah. You know, why wouldn't you want to, as a massive actor, be like, well, what could I do on screen for 35 seconds?
Yeah.
And add to the, you know, enhance the zombie scene of this movie. So Edgar Wright and Sean Penn, or Simon Pegg, Sean Penn.
Sean Penn.
Sean Penn.
Folks. Yeah. Sean Penn.
Every dead man walking.
What the walking dead? What the hell happened there? What was that?
they opted to just be zombies in this movie, which I think is a cool thing. I think it shows that they really made this movie as a tribute to the godfather of zombie movies and the genre as a whole.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, Godfather. I want De Niro, Pacino, 50 seconds in a movie as zombies, acting their asses off. Grammy, Oscar, whatever you get.
Cat.
Yeah.
Cat. Got something? No.
I gotta flip my page.
Jesus Christ. What have you been doing the whole time we were talking?
Staring at my page.
I've been freestyling all of this.
Oh, my Lord. What else happened?
I really liked one of my favorite parts was when Sean rips his name tag off. That to me symbolized Sean was no longer going to be a passive observer in his own life. He wasn't going to be a zombie anymore. He was going to actually try to do something. You have to fight the zombies. You have to rip the name tag off and like shake yourself out of this, you know, this day-to-day walking sleep and actually try to do something. Because why else is life worth living? Again, this goes back to Dawn of the Dead. There's surviving, there's existing, and there's living. And that's one of the things that, you know, I hope we can do with this podcast. Obviously misguided. Hold on, Kevin. But that seemed to me like, you know, sort of the one of the big parts of the movie to me.
Yeah. And then at the end, like, it just goes back to business as usual. Like, they get all the zombies under control, and then they're like, we found out that zombies actually make great service employees. And they're, like, pushing carts, yeah. And, like, they're on reality TV, yeah. Like, fighting over meat in, like, an inflatable pool. Like,
and Ed's one of, like, the only zombies that, like, went on to, like, keep doing exactly what he was doing.
Ed on a chain. So, the zombie on a chain. 28 days later, zombie on a chain.
It was a zombie on a chain. French horror.
God damn it.
The
zombie on a chain thing is in three of these movies.
Two of the ones we talked about, but Day of the Dead.
Is the original. So I mean, all of these pay homage to the, and I wouldn't call it ripping off, Kevin. I would call it like paying homage to what came before you. So I really liked that these included the original zombie on a chain, Bub, from Day of the Dead, which we obviously haven't had even time to get into, and we won't. But I did think there was also like sort of an abrupt tone shift at the end of Shaun of the Dead, mm-hmm. where it goes from the parody, every man like, I feel seen, and it when his mom dies or when she turns,
mm-hmm.
Like all of a sudden it's a real zombie movie. Like it's been this sort of like, hey, this is me at the pub.
Yeah.
And then you get to the end and it's a very serious zombie movie where he has to execute his own mother. And I mean, it was great because they have to sort of do that. And you have the survivor scene where Ed, there's always somebody that stays behind Ed in this version. We didn't get to that in some of the other ones, but one of the things in zombie movies, there's always somebody that decides to sacrifice themselves and stay behind, and Ed does that. So at the end, I thought it got very traditional, and it left the satire a little bit.
Yeah. No, because when Ed is deciding to leave himself up, he farts, and he says, I'm sorry, Sean.
Yeah.
And Sean thinks he's being like, no, it's fine. Like, you're giving yourself up.
Mm-hmm.
And it harkens back to an earlier scene where Ed tries to apologize for Sean for the fact that he doesn't work and leaves the apartment crap. Yeah. And he's like, I'm sorry, Sean. And Sean has to wait for it. And all of a sudden he's like, oh, my God. And he says, I'll stop doing it when you stop laughing. But also earlier in the movie, I noticed that Peter, their roommate, the dickhead roommate they have, he says to Ed, why don't you just go live in the shed?
Mm.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the very end of the movie is brilliant. Mm-hmm. Honestly, it's like super heartwarming. Sean goes out and he's got Ed chained up in the shed
with his video game
system. There's a lot more to this movie. I think you're right. It does try to flip itself into like a typical zombie movie. But I think what Edgar Wright did here is brilliant and so much deeper, and like you could watch this movie once a day every day and find some little nuance that he did.
It's kind of a fun little satire on like being complacent in life. I don't really think it's anything earth-shattering. It's not Scorsese.
I hate you.
It's closer to like a
Scorsese's
Marvel.
Scorsese's never
a
made
Marvel?
It.
I'm just kidding. I'm just banging. Kevin's like trying to do sports with me or something.
I watched that.
Oh! One of the many homages that Sean pays to its predecessors is the abdomen entrail scene.
Ooh, yeah.
Very important. Mm-hmm. It's in Dawn of the Dead. It's in most zombie movies at some point toward the end, toward like the back half of the movie. Somebody is on the ground, laying prone, and they get ripped open from the stomach, and mm-hmm. everybody eats their entrails. Very important, and Sean does that.
Yo,
I really appreciate it.
Yo, did you like print out your notes?
I typed them, yeah. I wrote them by hand.
You had a staple in there and shit.
I wrote them by hand, and my handwriting is very bad, what and I'm trying to watch a movie, so I did type.
I've been freestyling this whole time, dude.
Nah, I typed them.
Oh, wow.
That's right, Kevin. You hear that?
One of the things that I think is relatable about Shaun of the Dead is, you know, Sean is in this 3-year relationship and his girlfriend is, you know, constantly asking him to not even like go out of his way to do things, but just to like do things for the relationship to kind of mix things up. She doesn't want to go to the Winchester every night. She wants to go out to a fancy, you know, place with the fish, you know, stuff like that. And he's just constantly dropping that ball around every corner, not just with her. You know, he never gets his mom flowers and his stepdad gets mad. So I think it's a very relatable aspect of, you know, expecting the bare minimum from someone and them just not delivering at all. But then, you know, the apocalypse happens. And so he takes it upon himself to then just try to make up for everything. And he, even when he goes to, you know, rescue her from her apartment, he's like, this isn't about us. This is about survival. And then she's like, is it though?
You that know? Was sort of the apocalypse, was him getting that message from his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. You are an apathetic loser. You don't care about anything. You don't care about me. You're not putting any effort into this relationship at all. You just think that we're going to zombify out and go to the Winchester every night. And the apocalypse I liked it and I related to it. I thought it was a little bit condescending. Like, the man realized he's a fucking asshole, and now since there's an apocalypse, now all of a sudden he's gonna put in all this effort because he has to save his mom. When his girlfriend didn't inspire this effort before now, but now that his mom is under threat and there's a zombie apocalypse, all of a sudden he's gonna be Mr. Straight Guy and he's gonna try to do the right things.
Yeah.
Well, I'm curious too about what you guys think about the end of the movie. Everything both of you just talked about, Kat and Trent, is at the end of the movie, he ends up with the girl and with his best buddy that caused all of this all of these problems throughout the entire film in their relationship in the shit.
Yeah.
So Sean, we think he's kind of a dick. I think he's well-intended.
I love Sean. I think you guys can say he's a dick. You guys can talk mad trash about him. I like Sean. I am Sean.
The last thing I personally wanted to talk about with this one was I did think that the end of the movie resonated with me as someone who is looking down the road of my life and dealing with the end of my parents' lives. Things change a little bit. And I thought that happened with Sean at the end when he, for example, executes his own mother. Mm-hmm. His stepdad dies. It takes a little while to turn. That to me was sort of everybody faces that, and you don't, you go through life and you know that this is going to happen, and it happens with your grandparents, but you don't really think a lot until you get there about what it's going to look like when you have to deal with the end of your parents' lives. And I thought that it was a little bit weird of a tonal shift, but I liked it where all of a sudden, here's the most serious thing. It's actually not your girlfriend. It's actually not your buddy, Ed. You know, it's the end of your parents' lives, and what are you going to do after that? And are you going to take some kind of control and some kind of agency, you know, over yourself and over what's going on? I that's kind of what I got out of that part.
Good hot take.
Hot take.
Yeah.
Touch on my burning hand, on the astral zombies to rape the land. Prime directive, exterminate the whole human race, and your face drops to a pile of flesh. Your heart beats in pumps of death. Prime directive, exterminate whatever's left.
But the last movie we watched was Train to Busan, a Korean movie on a train. Adventure, zombies, carnage, drama. Train to Busan, a Korean adventure. One of my favorite zombie movies. And it's saying a lot because, you know, we've been decades and decades and decades of zombie movies, all different types of characters, all kinds of different types of storylines. And somehow Train to Busan set itself apart from everything else.
Yeah, so this is a 2016 movie. Director is Yeon Sang-ho. It's a, it's basic, it's a very simple concept, it seems like. It's a father going through a divorce who has sole custody of his daughter. It's her birthday. He's very absentee as he is a fund manager and pays no attention to his kid. So his mother watches his daughter most of the time, and it's her birthday. She wants to go see her mother, which requires them to take a train. And they get on the train, and the zombie apocalypse breaks out. So the entire movie is him on a train with his kid, fighting a zombie apocalypse while also figuring out how to be a better father. And to me, this is it's not just a great zombie movie. This is one of the most emotional movies I've watched in years. I've cried almost every time I've watched it. It kills me.
I'm sorry, you spoiled my reveal. I was going to reveal that you admitted to crying every time you watch this movie, and now you've really stolen my thunder.
I cried.
It's a great movie.
You cried again?
I'm a crier.
This movie to me was like, I understood immediately. I've seen it before, obviously, but I watched it again. I understood why Dave, you and you, Kevin, connected to it so much, because I felt like, aside from being just a great zombie movie in the very traditional genre sense, I felt like it had a lot of things to say about being a parent and being a child. And you two are the only, Dave and Kevin, you're the only parents at the table. And so I could kind of, when I was, you know, we talk about watching these movies and we're hearing each other's voices. I could sort of, while I was watching this, I was seeing and hearing and thinking about you guys and your experiences and Kat, your experience as a child.
As a child.
Currently. Yeah.
Yeah, right now.
It's the worst birthday ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She got two Wii's. Gross. I hate that.
but there's also the dynamic between the lead, the dad that we're talking about, who is the terrible father, and then there he has this contentious relationship with a father to be. So also on the train is the dad, his daughter. And you're right, Trent. You learn a lot about what it's like to be a kid in a situation like this. And God bless her, because I can't imagine my own kid keeping her shit together like his daughter did. But then he has this contentious relationship with another father-to-be whose wife is pregnant. So you're watching a dad who sucks, who knows he sucks, and is fully realizing it, his daughter, and then this other dad-to-be, and then a seven, eight, nine-month pregnant woman in the zombie apocalypse on a train. It sounds insane when you really say it out loud like that, but this movie is so brilliantly done and has so much heart. Out of all the movies we watch, I think Shaun of the Dead has a lot of heart, but Train to Busan is, we've talked about the fact that horror movies are sometimes family studies and dramas that just have some gore in them. Train to Busan nails that for me. It is full of heart. First and foremost, it is a heartfelt movie from start to finish. It does have tons of societal tropes with the classism and, you know, the different classes on car to car. But I know I'm usually going down a nerdy rabbit hole, but I can't with this movie because it guts me every time I watch it.
Korean movies have soul. They really do.
That's funny because this reminded me of the recent Oscar sweeping South Korean film Parasite, and also Snowpiercer.
I love that.
both of those movies, both South Korean, very similar. To, this was almost like a mashup. Yeah. Of,
it was criticized for being too similar to Snowpiercer.
It was Snowpiercer meets Parasite meets the zombies.
But it was better than Snowpiercer. I liked Snowpiercer
definitely.
A lot.
I did too, but I like this better.
The disheveled guy that was like the doomsday, like the end,
they're
end
all
is
dead.
Near
they're
guy.
All dead. They're
he
all
was
dead.
Like the same dude as in Snowpiercer. There was like the same character.
Yeah, I thought that it took a lot of Snowpiercer and it took a little bit of Parasite. There is some class commentary. One of the most important things, I think, again, it's really about the parent-child relationship, but one of the other most important things about the movie is the idea of, and this is runs through all these movies, so I'm glad that we can talk about it on this one for a minute, is whether you watch out for yourself, which is what I believe the father says, mm-hmm. only watch out for yourself, or whether you have any sort of not only obligation, you know, you can think about it in terms of an obligation to other people around you, but whether you have a benefit from the collective and from the group and from helping each other. And one of the more powerful things I thought about this, he's the main character is very selfish and he's a watch out for yourself guy. But one of the people that he tries to, that he would throw overboard in a minute ends up helping him through the rest of the movie. And he's of a lower class, a lower caste, however you want to sort of define it. But he ends up helping him, even though he's already essentially been thrown overboard by the guy, doesn't care about him at all. He would leave him. He does try to leave him, tries mm-hmm. to leave everyone to get away on his own.
Yeah.
But in the end, the only way that he survived was because this person who was of a lower class than him and he had already abandoned, decided to still, despite that, help him and help him survive this ordeal.
Well, I joked about liking that businessman. The businessman that just threw all the millennials as a human shield in his way whenever a zombie came. And everyone hated him, but I was like, the main character did the same thing when he didn't tell the people where the safe zone was and, you know, to go the other way.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever cheered for zombies to eat a person more than that one shitty guy on that train. Oh, my God. Well, I thought about it, too, at... you know, during 28 Days Later, all the zombies like break into the compound. And I was like, yeah, get them. Get those army guys. Because, mm-hmm. you know, there has to be like a villainous human. But yeah, that guy on Train to Busan sucked.
Well, the main character in Train to Busan, when he got the phone call in the bathroom that his corporation that he worked for was actually responsible mm-hmm. for the outbreak. You know, he's trying to be a good dad. He's trying to make up for lost time with his kid, but it's not really working. And he,
so
not to mention he loses his kid a bunch of times.
Yeah, he's like
I'm
pregnant
not gonna
lady's
lose my
got
kid
you
at
yeah.
all if we're in a zombie apocalypse.
But I would like to like point out the businessman that we're talking about who is horrible, mm-hmm. who is, like you said, I can't wait for this guy to get eaten. And
he's
he
gotta.
Still totally fucks up the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, I love the fact that Train to Busan showed the father that we're talking about, the main character. He progresses. He realizes these things. And I also think we can't lose the fact that the businessman, it's a great portrayal of somebody going through the same thing that does not learn anything, mm-hmm. does not change themselves,
yeah.
remains completely selfish the entire time while you watch this dad, which is heartbreaking. And the movie ends, spoiler alert, pause now if you haven't seen Train to Busan, because fuck you if you haven't. You should have.
Well, it's kind of new. I would say I was
2018.
2016.
It's kind of new.
16.
16?
I wouldn't give away the spoiler. That's just me. I mean, okay. I have the ultimate
16 maybe like okay, at the film fine. Festival, but I don't think it was in wide release until 18.
Yeah, that's kind of new. Train to Busan is a great fucking movie. You should see it, and we won't spoil the ending so you can go watch it.
Agreed.
All right, so speak all evil horror in the news. We got a couple things related to the movies that we've talked about in this episode. America feels the need to remake Train to Busan.
What?
Yes. So James Wan, Gary Dauberman, who are responsible for Saw, The Conjuring Universe, The Insidious Universe, Aquaman,
Oh.
They are currently already in development of an American remake of Train to Busan. However, in better news, there is also a sequel to Train to Busan coming out.
I know that.
Yes.
Where the original director is developing something. I'm curious as to what – I already know what you guys think about the American remake. You made that very clear. But I'm curious about –
hopefully we'll get the coronavirus before it comes out.
What you guys think. So this sequel to Train to Busan is going to be called Peninsula. It happens 4 years after the original movie.
Okay.
And the peninsula, the Korean peninsula, is devastated. And it talks about a former soldier who escaped and is given a mission to go back, and he unexpectedly meets survivors. Based on Train to Busan, I believe in this director. I will say personally, I don't believe in James Wan doing any justice to an American remake, but I am curious about Peninsula.
Yeah.
So the other topic to do with the movie that we watched is the cable channel Sci-Fi has recently announced that they've ordered a 10-episode series for a remake of George Romero's Day of the Dead. So I know we just talked about Dawn of the Dead. We obviously have referenced Night of the Living Dead. There have been two horrible remakes of Day of the Dead. Barely passable. I'm not a huge fan of Sci-Fi.
Terrible.
The channel? Done,
yes.
Sharknado's it.
But the synopsis of this is interesting, as it claims to be about what a group of survivors do during the first 24 hours of the zombie outbreak, which to me sounds a lot like Night of the Living Dead. Mm. We're coming to get you, Barbara. And not Day of the Dead.
Yeah. It's interesting.
So, yeah.
We'll see.